Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Hey guys, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Are you Candace?
I'm good. I love your shirt.
Thanks. Representing
Cousins on Crime merch.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, have you gotten your merch?
Have you?
Send us pictures.
Yeah, send us pictures. We want to see you out in the wild.
Or drinking your glass of iced coffee.
I know. I was at my mom's the other day and I saw hers in the kitchen and I was like,
oh, our biggest supporter.
I know, our biggest supporter. But how are you doing today?
I'm good.
On this Monday.
I'm good. I'm glad I'm off work and now I'm sitting here with you chit-chatting.
Chit-chat.
Best part of my day.
Oh, I always feel bad because I'm like dragging out your Monday, you know?
No, that's okay. Really. I mean, you light up my life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what's that song? That Leon
Light
Arms song?
Up my
there
life.
You go. I was, I knew you'd know it. I knew you'd know it.
Yeah, she's one of the only concerts I went to when I was younger. Yes, mm-hmm. You were there too.
I was there. I think that's the last time I was at Billy Bob's when I was underage.
Mm, with our parents.
With our parents. Yeah, well, cool. It's nice to see you. I'm glad to see you.
Yeah. Well, do you want to get started?
Let me crack my knuckles.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Put your seatbelt on.
Okay.
Okay. Today we're going to talk about Sarah Ann Walker. She was born in Dubuque, Iowa in 1966 to Joe and Carol Walker. She had two siblings. The family moved around. They lived in California, Arizona, and Texas.
Cool.
Dallas, Texas was where she attended junior high, high school, and college.
Wow.
She earned a master's degree in business. So she was doing the thing.
She was doing all of it.
In 2006, she was working on a theological degree.
Wow.
It was said that she looked forward to her Bible study classes and was a committed Bible reader.
Wow.
A description I read about her said that she had the energy of a steam engine. The only difference is she just never ran out of the steam.
Wow. Was she on a stimulant of some kind? Can I have some?
She was high on Jesus.
She was high on Jesus.
Her presence made any room become enthusiastic and alive.
I love it.
Kind of like you did for me tonight.
Oh, I think it was just the lemonade sugar that I brought you.
Yeah, thank you for that. That did help. But anyway, she had a great sense of humor. She filled others with happiness. To converse with her, you'd think you were the funniest person. She would just laugh at
people like that.
I know.
That just laugh at your jokes.
Yeah. Yeah. She would laugh at anybody's jokes.
That makes people feel so good.
I
know. When you reciprocate that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
But also, it's like a genuine laugh. It's
right.
Not just like a...
She just was like genuinely interested in other people.
Yeah.
Sounds like.
Exactly. Hmm. So she was just bubbly. Sarah started her career in real estate, starting out leasing apartments and moved on to selling homes for builders like David Weekly Homes, Sovereign Homes, Highland and Huntington Homes. after the birth of her son, or her second son, she went to work for D.R. Horton Homes, and she was a top seller for them. She won all kinds of things, wow, like trips and stuff, for being top seller.
That's really cool. It sounds like she transitioned into that career in a really great way. Like, first the apartments, then working for builders. And it seems like she got a lot of experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Working for other people.
Stones.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people go into real estate just like go in selling homes, you know? And it takes a while to get there, but
it does. I mean, it's
sounds like a strategic person.
Yeah. Hmm. She actually spent a total of 20 years in real estate.
Wow.
So all this experience. She won numerous achievement awards for outstanding sales. She loved to travel and had vacationed in Hawaii, the Bahamas, Aruba, and Scotland.
Excuse me.
Yeah. She stayed active. I mean, she needed to get that energy out, you know, so she would play tennis and golf. She had just purchased a new home, and her neighborhood had a par 3 golf course, so she would spend time with her older son and showing him how to play.
Aww.
Sarah would sit and play with her two sons like she was a kid herself. She would take them to Six Flags, the water park.
She matched their energy.
Yeah. And on vacation, or she would take them to the beach and all that. So jumping to July of 2006, Sarah was recently divorced. That wasn't something she wanted. This was her second divorce. However, here she was starting a new life, and she was 40 at this time. Her oldest son from her first marriage was 15, and her youngest son was 4. She signed herself up on millionairematch.com.
Okay. Is there such a thing?
Yeah, there is.
Okay. Well, I better download that.
Candace, you're married.
That's a website. This is not an app.
I don't know if it's
still
a thing.
See, I don't even know.
This was back in 2006, so.
Okay.
I don't know if it's still around.
I'm kidding, Daniel. Chill. He doesn't even listen to our show. What am I saying?
His coworkers are going to tell you.
His coworkers will tell him.
So yeah, she's just filling out the waters, you know, on this new dating website.
I mean, listen, this woman knows what she wants. She's like, I'm not going to sign up for Tinder. I'm not signing up for, you know, Christian Mingle. I'm going to sign up for millionaires.
Okay. And so you're, to your point from earlier, she's got this stepping stone to the real estate in her career, but her love life, she's going straight for it.
She's had stepping stone. It sounds like she's been kissing frogs back there.
Right.
You know, she's like, let me try something else.
Yeah, you got a point. So on July 8th, Sarah planned to work that day. So Randy Tate, Sarah's ex-husband, picked up their son, her second son, from her home early that morning. So while Randy was at Sarah's, she showed him a new Rolex watch that she had just purchased the previous day. She's like, hey, look at this. So,
wow. And he was like, so you don't need that child support check that I was going to drop off?
Seems like she was doing pretty well for herself. But so often she would wear ornate rings and brand name watches. Yeah, she was just really classy, and she was a professional woman. We'll post the pictures. You'll see for yourself. But it was important for her to look the part, dress for success.
Mm-hmm.
So Sarah then went on to work, and she was set up at the model home at the Craig Ranch subdivision in McKinney, Texas. If someone called about the house or walked in, she would show them around, try to make the sale, you know. At about 12:30 p.m., Sarah called her cousin on the phone. Jessica was her cousin, and Jessica mentioned that Sarah was in a really good mood that day. During their conversation, they talked for about 15 minutes, and then Sarah told her cousin that, hey, someone just walked in, I gotta go. And to her family, that meant that a customer was there and She wanted to go mm-hmm. make the sale. So at about 1:10 p.m., a man named Andy and his wife came to look at the model home. When they entered, Andy noted that it appeared to have been ransacked. He continued to walk through the house and he saw a large pool of blood in the dining room. And that's the dining room is where the sales desk was located. He followed the trail of blood into the kitchen, where he saw Sarah lying face up on the floor. The upper half of her body was covered in blood.
Oh my gosh.
Andy told his wife to call police and they hurried out of the house.
What a shock.
Yeah.
You just go in to look at this nice house and expect to see pristine carpets.
Oh yeah.
And like everything in order.
You're excited to start something new.
I know.
To walk into.
Right.
Absolutely. Andy ran into the street and flagged down a vehicle for help. He briefly went back inside to check on Sarah. I don't know what I would have done, like check her out and then run outside, or who knows. But he goes back inside, checks on Sarah, but she had no sign of life. He then went back outside and waited for emergency personnel to arrive. When Texas Ranger A.P. Davidson arrived at the model home, he noticed signs of a struggle in the dining room. The desk was crooked. The desk chair was out of place. A plant stand was knocked over and a potted plant was on the floor. A pair of women's shoes, a broken hair clip, and a broken earring were also on the floor, all belonging to Sarah. There was a trail of blood leading from the dining room into the kitchen. Sarah's body was on the kitchen floor, and it appeared that she had multiple stab wounds. Davidson opined that she had been dragged by her feet from the dining room to the kitchen because the long skirt she was wearing was rolled up to her waistline. You know, at first you could say, oh, maybe her skirt is up because she was sexually mm-hmm. assaulted, but that they did determine that that did not happen.
I think we see that in a lot of cases where
right.
the clothes are either pulled down or pulled up.
Yeah.
Like, especially the bottom half.
Yeah.
You know, that's the first thing we think about, but yeah. it's because they were dragged or moved or
exactly.
whatever.
Exactly. So that is what they determined, that she was dragged by her feet. So her skirt rolled up. McKinney police officer Pete Copen discovered a bloody fingerprint on the deadbolt lock of the front door of the model home. However, he testified that there were not enough individual characteristics for a positive identification. He also saw what appeared to be blood on the plant stand, on the ceramic tile in the entryway, on the wall next to the edge of the window beside the front door, and on the pull cord of the window, the window blinds.
Oh, let me shut these blinds because right. I'm just be killing somebody right now.
Exactly. You're reading my notes.
So
my next line was, to me, that suggests that the killer took it upon himself to close the blinds mm-hmm. to conceal his actions.
Yeah.
It also appeared that there had been blood in the kitchen sink that had been washed or diluted with water, suggesting that the killer tried to clean up at the scene. Maybe he was cut, bleeding, yeah. and he tried to clean himself. Copen collected blood swabs and other evidence from the scene for further testing. A witness, a man named Nelson, reached out to police and described what he encountered and saw that day. Nelson is the husband to Mamie, another real estate agent in the area. He described seeing a man that was muscular and of Asian descent. He was about 5 feet, 5 inches tall, and he had a buzz cut. His account of that day was that at about 9:40 that morning, his wife, Mamie, received a phone call from a man who identified himself as Chan Lee. The man told her that he found her phone number in a Keller Williams advertisement and that he wanted to look at a townhouse that she had listed in the Craig Ranch subdivision. He said that he had just moved to Texas from North Carolina to the Dallas area, that he had graduated from the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, and that he worked for Texas Instruments, and he was looking for a new home. This Chan guy said that he was calling from a phone booth, you know, 2006, at the 7-Eleven at Midway and Park, and that he was staying in room 245 at the In-Town Suites.
That's just a lot of information.
Right. Why does he feel the need to give all of this? I don't know if she asked him questions or if he just offered all of this.
That's just a lot of information. You know what I mean? Right. Like, I want to look at this townhome. And by the way, I moved here from, I mean, that seems like an obvious thing to say, but where you work, like.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe she was asking him questions, mm-hmm. like trying to feel out who he was or right. what exactly he was looking for.
Interesting.
When Mamie asked him for a contact number, he said that he did not have a cell phone and that, and that's when the phone cut off.
Oh.
Before their conversation had ended. Like she's still talking and then she, I don't know.
He didn't put 25 more cents in there.
So she tried to reach him by calling his hotel. She called two In-Town Suites in the area. One did not have a room 245.
Okay.
The other one did, but it just had a recording on it.
She's really trying to make the sale. Like, I would be like, okay, he'll call back, I guess, if he really is interested.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know what more information she wanted, but
she wanted his favorite color, his favorite, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, so she called the second one and they had no record of Chan Lee.
Okay.
Mamie was leery of meeting this man. I guess that's why she wanted to know more, because she's like, something just in her gut wasn't
right.
Maybe
that's why she called, because she was like, let's see if there's really...
Yeah.
If he's really at any of these places.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, she was leery of meeting the man, but she didn't want to deny herself the opportunity to make some money.
Yeah, of course.
She agreed to meet him and she brought her husband, Nelson, along with her. So they arrived to show the townhouse between 11:30 a.m. and noon. They sat in the car and waited for the man to show. So eventually a man drove by in a white Ford Mustang and parked across from a DR Horton model home down the street. They observed the man getting out of the Mustang and he started to walk across the street. They drove over to the man and asked him if he was Chan Lee. He looked up and away from them and nonchalantly shook his head no and just continued walking. Nelson was the one that really got a better look at him, though it was really a quick glance at the guy. Mamie and Nelson continued to drive past the man, and they noticed that the Mustang had Texas license plate. I guess that was important because Chan Lee had told her that he just moved from North Carolina.
Right. So they're thinking maybe he still has North Carolina plates. Right. Or... Yeah, because it took me a long time to get my Texas plates.
Yeah, it happens. So Nelson drove to the end of the block and he turned around and drove back towards the house where they were going to meet. But when he came back around, the Mustang was no longer there. He then drove back to the townhouse so his wife could show it to another potential buyer. Nelson goes into the house with Mamie, and as he's letting her do her thing, he's just piddling around. He looked out of the bedroom window, and he saw Sarah arrive in her Porsche.
Oh.
She was across the street. She had parked her car across the street and was going into that townhome. They all knew each other. Nelson made a comment to his wife about seeing Sarah as she was walking into the model home. And about that same time, Nelson also saw the white Mustang.
Ooh.
That he saw earlier. That Mustang was parked on the street in front of the model home where Sarah was. When Mamie finished showing the townhouse that they were in, somewhere between 12:30 and 1 p.m., her and her husband left. The white Mustang was still parked there. Nelson suggested maybe they go say hi to Sarah. But then they decided against it because they were hungry and they were ready to get lunch.
Oh, no. What if they did?
I know. And that's a
big
question.
That guy would have been spooked and he would have left probably.
Right. I mean, that's what I would think. But then investigators even were like, without a doubt, we think if they went in and interrupted, he probably would have attacked them.
What was he? 5'5"? 5'5". Maybe.
I mean, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, she had 33 stab wounds.
Good Lord.
So, I mean, he was on a rampage for what? So, William Rohr, the Collin County medical examiner who performed Sarah's autopsy, testified that she sustained several blunt force injuries to her head. Mm. He opined that the blunt force injuries were a result of several blows and that they were consistent with being struck in the face with the plant stand that was in the floor. She had multiple bruises on her face and head, a broken nose, fractured teeth.
See, she fought this little twerp.
Oh, yeah.
She's like...
Absolutely.
Who are you?
Yeah, she didn't make it
I'm
easy
so
for him.
I'm so sorry.
She had some defensive wounds, including an excised wound on her left arm and a broken fingernail on her right hand. So, again, she suffered a total of 33 stab wounds, 10 of which penetrated vital organs and blood vessels.
Oh.
Rohr testified that any one of those 10 wounds could have been pretty much immediately fatal. Sarah also had a bite mark on the back of her neck.
Gross.
Yeah. It was determined that it was inflicted at or near the time of her death. Rohr preserved this evidence by using a scalpel to excise the bite mark and the surrounding area. Detectives interviewed all of the men that Sarah had connected with on the millionairematch.com website.
Did any of you bite her on the scruff of the neck?
Let me see your teeth.
It's hard to bite someone on the back of the neck. I try to do it to my kids all the time. I do. I mean, not hard, but like I just want to, you know,
bite
their scruff of their neck. And, you know,
that's your love language is aggression.
I just think that he had to have had her in a strange position to have accomplished that.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, was he behind her and that's how he attacked her?
Maybe he only came up to the back of her neck because he was so short.
He's a shorty. Maybe.
Anyways, back to the story.
Yeah. So. Sorry about that. But yes, all these men were interviewed and all of them were ruled out as suspects. By the time Nelson was really questioned about what this man looked like, he couldn't really remember great details. Remember, he says it was a quick glance at him as Nelson was driving past. So detectives had the idea to hypnotize Nelson.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if they really thought it would work or if they were just hopeful. Like, let's try this and see what happens. Anyway, the hypnotist seemed to be successful.
Wow.
He told Nelson to think of the scene like a movie and take pictures of the important details like facial features and whatnot. Due to that hypnotism, Nelson was able to give a really good detail for the sketch artist to sketch his face. So they posted the sketch on the news, you know. Upon seeing the picture of the sketch on the news, another real estate agent contacted detectives. She's like, I know exactly.
What a predator.
I know. But she said, I know exactly who this man is. So I guess the hypnotism or hypnosis, whatever that word is, it did work. This man had recently rented a home from this real estate agent. His name is Kasol Chanthakaman. She proceeded to tell them.
Could you use that in a sentence, please? His name was Sol.
Kasol Chanthakaman.
Okay. Did you practice that?
I did. Okay. And I'm still not sure I'm saying it correctly. But she proceeded to tell them of a recent situation where he came to her personal home and knocked on her door.
Inappropriate.
And he told her that his car was broke down and asked her to use the phone. Like, weird.
I hate that. This is not 1970.
No. So, thank God she's smart and she refused to let him in. She said he got mad, irate, and went to her back door and started banging on her door and demanded that she let him in.
Oh my gosh.
She was able to call the police and they came and arrested him. DNA analysis linked Kasol Chanthakaman to evidence from the crime scene of Sarah's crime scene.
Oh.
His DNA profile was consistent with the DNA obtained from Sarah's fingernails, the window blind pull cord, the deadbolt lock and faceplate, and some of the swabs taken from the living room, the kitchen, the entryway.
Wow.
The DNA analysis or analyst testified that only a partial profile was obtained from a swab taken from the kitchen sink. But of course, it was diluted. Mm-hmm. Water washed it away. However, the set of genetic markers that she was able to detect in the partial profile corresponded with the genetic markers observed in the DNA profile of Kasol.
Wow.
After reaching the results of the DNA analysis, police arrested 25-year-old Kasol at his apartment on September 5th, 2006. Texas Ranger Davidson testified that Kasol owned a white Ford Mustang.
That is brand new information. Mm.
And his apartment was located 3 miles away from the payphone Midway and Park. Davidson spoke to Kasol's sister, who informed him that he had attended school in North Carolina and that he had recently moved from Charlotte to Dallas in February 2006. Wow. So yeah, he was there, what, five Gosh. Months? If I'm doing my math correctly. Mm. Come to find out, he had been on parole after serving time.
I don't want to hear this.
In I'm North out. Carolina.
Gotta go.
Yeah, you're not going to like the next sentence I have to tell you. He was in North Carolina in jail or prison for aggravated kidnapping and robbery. He served 7 years of his 11-year sentence, and due to prison overcrowding, he was released. So, I think if I'm the person that helped get this man released and then he goes on to kill someone, what?
Prison overcrowding, there's not anybody else they could have let out.
Right. Can we You're do trying a to better tell me job
that at, there were no lesser crimes than kidnapping?
I know. Come on.
Come on. This is ridiculous.
So Davidson determined that Kasol had filled out a lease application at an apartment complex near the in-town suites on Trinity Mills. Also discovered that Kasol was broke and his bank account was overdrawn on the day that Sarah was murdered. So perhaps this is the motive for such a heinous act.
Well, I guess those calculators weren't doing anything for him. He wasn't selling enough calculators, right. I guess.
Yeah. So instead of working harder, he's going to go rob somebody of their fancy jewelry. So Officer Copen observed what appeared to be some healed cuts or scratches on Kasol's hands. Yeah. Upon review of his cell phone was a picture of him pretending to bite his dog
Gross.
So, I mean, when you see that picture, you're like, you're making this connection. You're connecting the dots. Like,
it's just one more like piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. Did he have a fascination with biting?
Ew.
Animals and people?
Ugh.
Casal was transported to the McKinney Police Department, where he was interviewed by Officer Randall Norton. At first, he denied ever being in McKinney in his white Mustang. Upon further questioning, he stated that his car had broken down at a model home.
Oh.
Again?
Oh my goodness.
That he knocked on the door, but no one answered. He took like 3 or 4 steps inside and asked if anyone was home, but no one was there.
Hmm.
And that he spoke to a man and a woman in a green or blue Corolla Camry.
Oh, come on.
Nelson and yeah. Minnie. As he left. That's when he spoke to them, was as he left. But no. It was when he pulled up. Mm-hmm. Come on. Next, he admitted that he went into the kitchen, to the kitchen sink, for a drink of water.
Didn't notice the body in there, I guess. Mm.
No. But he said that he didn't know how to use the faucet because of the way that the hot water came out. I don't know.
Okay.
So
he's
just
talking too much again. Say less. Mm-hmm.
Just stop talking. And that's what he did. He asked for a lawyer straight up. So anyway, he says after he couldn't figure out the faucet, he just left.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that the old cuts on his hand was from work, and it could be possible.
Those calculators are dangerous, I tell you.
But it could be possible that he could have been bleeding when he was inside the model home.
Mm-hmm.
And also said that he had some of his own property for cash, or he pawned some of his own property for cash on somewhere at a pawn shop on Greenville Avenue, including a tape deck, a drill, and an inexpensive Kenneth Cole watch.
Hmm.
So, you know, we see this all the time where suspects give details,
yeah,
and it's somewhat of the truth.
Exactly.
So here he is saying he pawned a watch, but I mean, it was a Rolex.
Admit what you have to, deny what you can.
Right. So I'm not sure why he offered up this part, but he needs to rephrase that part that he said he took his own property, because mm-hmm, it wasn't his own. Yeah. It was Sarah's. Remember I mentioned the watch and the ring that Sarah wore? That morning at around 11:45 a.m., she went to a Bank of America in Frisco. And on the bank surveillance video, you can see her wearing a watch and mm-hmm, a beautiful, big, beautiful ring on her finger. However, when Sarah's body was found, she did not have that jewelry on her body. Mm. The jewelry was nowhere to be found. When the police searched her residence, they found one of her favorite name brand watches. However, the police never located the Rolex, but they did find the box and the receipt of the Rolex. Uncut jams. So forensic dentistry consultant Brent Hudson examined Casal and made impressions of his teeth.
Mm.
Hudson compared his teeth to the bite mark on Sarah's neck and found enough similarities that he was unable to exclude
mm-hmm,
Casal from that population of individuals that could have inflicted this injury. Hudson concluded, within reasonable dental certainty, beyond a doubt, that Casal was responsible for the bite mark on Sarah's neck. In an interview, Hudson says that this case was one that he was most sure and positive
wow,
on the match. Prosecutors believe that his intent that day was to meet with Mamie.
Yes.
When he
Can
saw...
Can you imagine?
I know.
If she didn't bring her husband.
I know. Ooh, chills. So when he saw her husband with her, he kept walking and then he left. He was on to the next opportunity, which was Sarah Walker.
Mm-mm.
September 2006, Casol was charged with intentionally and knowingly causing Sarah's death while in the course of committing or attempting to commit robbery. October 2007, a year later, he was convicted and sentenced to death.
Bye-bye.
Though the next 15 years he maintained his innocence and made several appeals, on August 17th, 2022, he was executed by lethal injection. In his final statement, after he was strapped to the death chamber gurney, Casol thanked Jesus Christ, his prison ministers with the Texas prison system, and all these people in his life that aided him in his journey.
Okay.
None of Sarah's family attended the execution, but he said a message to them saying, "I pray my death will bring them peace." He mouthed the words, "I love you," to his mother, and 15 minutes later, he was pronounced deceased. Sarah's father, Joseph Walker, who died in 2021, had opposed Casol's execution.
Really?
He did not want him to be executed. He had told the Times Union in New York in 2013 that he had forgiven his daughter's killer. He said, "I don't have any hate towards him at all. I don't want him put to death." He said, "I've had others who thought I was just stupid, crazy, for feeling that way. Others would say, 'Well, aren't you angry?' Sure, I'm angry, but I'd be foolish to say I wasn't angry about what happened. I'm not angry enough to reject the Lord and his teachings." So with that, I'd like to add a couple of Bible verses regarding this mindset. And you can listen. You don't have to if you don't want to.
La, la, la.
But 1 John 1:9, it says, "If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just and will forgive us our sins and purify us from all unrighteousness." Matthew 6:14-15 says, "For if you forgive other people when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others their sins, your Father will not forgive your sins." And I'll leave you with one more. Ephesians 4:31-32. It says, "Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you." So I feel like that was his mindset, you know, that's what he held on to. It's difficult for us today in today's society to wrap our brains around it, but the Bible tells us about forgiveness. So yes, I believe even a murderer can be forgiven, but he would have to repent and turn from his evil ways. Yeah. Forgiveness. I'll just add one more thing, if you don't mind. I mean, I don't mean to preach, but I just felt like I needed to talk on forgiveness. So
yeah.
Forgiveness is a command by God, but that does not mean that we have to reconcile and be buddies with that person. So
right.
That helps us understand that, yeah, we can forgive, but we don't have to keep them in our lives.
Yeah.
But it's what I like to call overcoming evil with good.
It feels like a little bit twisted that he finds God in prison and he's put to death, and now it's presumed that he's in heaven.
Right.
He doesn't deserve that.
In a human way, human thinking, yes.
He should have, and I agree with her dad, but in the way that, like, I agree that I don't think he should have been put to death. He should have had to live in prison,
yeah,
grow old in prison, have knee aches, have to tell somebody he needs some
consequences.
Tylenol, have to, you know, his bowels stop working. He has to go to the infirmary at the prison and get crappy health care. You know, he should have had to live like that.
Yeah.
Eat, you know.
Right. There are consequences for your actions.
Yeah. She didn't get she worked hard in her life.
Absolutely.
To get to where she was for the things that she had, to provide the life that she did for her kids.
Yeah.
It sounds like she had amicable relationships with her exes.
Right.
And it seemed like she was just an overall lively, good person that was doing good.
Yeah.
And she didn't get to die peacefully on a gurney.
I know. It's hard to fathom.
She had to fight for her freaking life.
I know.
Claw and scrape and getting bitten and, you know, like getting busted in the head and stabbed and like just the fight for her life at the very end. It just, you know, I'm not against the death penalty at all.
Right.
Like, I do think there are some people like Kenneth McDuff, they will never change. Just get them off this earth. Just put them in the trash. Right. They'll never change. They are who they are. Go away.
Yeah,
I agree. But he should have had to suffer. He was a clear predator.
Yeah. Yeah. His time and time again.
Behavior was so predatory.
Right. And I mean, I hope he really did change his life before he died. But it is, I see what you're saying. But I think it helped her father to release that burden. He didn't want to hold on to that.
Sure. And that's the thing about forgiveness, is that cleanses your soul.
Yeah. You don't have Forgiving, to hold on to it.
Yeah. You don't have to carry that weight around.
Yeah.
You know, it does nothing for the person that you're forgiving. Maybe it does a little if they knew, but
true.
It does more for you. I mean, Absolutely. It's all about that. So
yeah.
I'm glad that he was able to make peace. I cannot imagine losing a child, a grown child who now has children and who's doing good in this world, you know, making it.
Yeah.
And to lose her in that way, I can't even wrap my brain around that.
I know.
So if he's happy, if he can move on, and that's all we can really ask for.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for telling her story. It's weird because at the beginning and like halfway through, I was like, oh, I've heard this before. And then I'm like, no, I have not heard this before. Definitely have heard, you know, cases about real estate agents being murdered.
Exactly.
This is not one of them. So
real estate agents, be safe out there.
Carry a taser, carry your mace.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for telling her story. And that was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Okay, let's do it.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please consider leaving us a positive review and rating. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe to our show.
You can also follow us on Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast, or send case suggestions to cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
Update your home and save big money with Mastercraft Doors at Menards. For over 50 years, Mastercraft has been making quality doors inside and out. Choose from the best in-stock selection of interior and exterior doors ready to take home today. Or design your door your way with our free designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on Mastercraft Doors and check out more great deals happening now at Menards. Save big.